Welcome back to our study of Judges. We are in chapter 7, and we're going to pick up with verse 24. And Gideon sent messengers throughout all Mount Ephraim, saying, "Come down against the Midianites, and take before them the waters unto Bethbara and Jordan." Then all the men of Ephraim gathered themselves together, and took the waters of Bethbara and Jordan. And they took two princes of the Midianites, Oreb and Zeeb. And they slew Oreb upon the rock of Oreb, and Zeeb they slew at the winepress of Zeeb, and pursued Midian, and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeeb to Gideon on the other side Jordan.
You remember the Ephraim did not go to battle. We know we had the 300 men, the others went back, but then the others, after, you know, the enemy started turning on itself, killing one another and then running, then these other armies came in and, you know, it was battle, but Ephraim was not called up, the tribe of Ephraim, okay? And so now Gideon's getting the word out to them, you know, take the fords of the river there. You don't let the enemy get away. And so in the process of this, they were able to capture these two kings, Oreb and Zeeb, and kill both of these kings. And so they're actively engaged in battle, and, you know, they've taken out two notable forces. Okay.
If the men of Ephraim said unto him, "Why hast thou served us thus, that thou callest us not, when thou wentest to fight with the Midianites?" And they did chide with him sharply. And he said unto them, "What have I done now in comparison of you? Is not the gleaning of the grape of Ephraim better than the vintage of Abiezer? God hath delivered unto your hands the princes of Midian, Oreb and Zeeb, and what was I able to do in comparison of ye?" Then their anger was abated toward him when he had said that.
It's interesting that they're reprimanding him for not calling them to begin with. But to understand that God selected the initial army, the 300 men, and he did blow the trumpet to gather the armies, but the way he handled that was, you guys, you know, you did some more than I have. That's why he's talking about the gleanings of Ephraim are better than those of Abiezer, which is his father. You know, he's identifying himself with his father's house. And so, because he handles this diplomatically, if I may say so, their anger subsides toward him. Now, why would they want to go to battle? The people today don't want to go to battle, do they? But the reason they go to battle is because they get the spoil. And so much wealth can be gathered in battle, so they're getting the wealth of these armies, of these two significant kings. So when they stop and think about it, they think, well, we didn't get such a bad deal after all, okay?
And Gideon came to Jordan and passed over, he and the 300 men that were with him, faint, yet pursuing them. And he said unto the men of Succoth, "Give, I pray you, loaves of bread unto the people that follow me, for they be faint, and I am pursuing after Zeba and Zalmunna, kings of Midian."
And now, I want you to think about something. The 300 men, initially, they blow the trumpets, break the pitchers, and they stand in their place. But when the army flees, then they don't just stand there. They pursue the army now. And this is where we're picking up. They're, Gideon and his 300 men are pursuing this army. So in the process of all this, believe it or not, you get hungry, you get tired, And so he's trying to get food for his army, for his soldiers. And so he's asking the people there at Succoth to give him food because they're pursuing Zeba and Zalmunna, the kings of Midian. And so just to understand what that setting is, we're looking for food. How about helping us out? But he didn't get a very positive reply.
And the princess of Succoth said, "Are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna now in thy hand, that we should give bread unto thine army?" And Gideon said, "Therefore, when the Lord hath delivered Zeba and Zalmunna into my hand, then I will tear your flesh with thorns of the wilderness and with briars."
Now, note Gideon's confidence here.
Yeah.
God has already spoken to him that he was given the army of Midian into Gideon's hand. In other words, Gideon already has a guarantee that he's going to win this thing, okay? And so when he comes to them and requests food, their reply, well, "Have you captured these kings yet? Not then, we're not giving you this. How do we know that they won't defeat you and then come back and defeat us?" is the essence of it, okay? So Gideon says, "When I do, I'll come back and I will punish you. I'll deal with you." Pretty confident, right?
You think about how, as Pete just said, Gideon had, on the inside, the victory was already there because the Lord had told him. And so often when the Lord speaks to our hearts about something, we've mentioned this time and time again, but those around us, those closest to us, don't hear what the Lord says to us. And so oftentimes we'll be met with opposition, but we have to stick true and stay with what the Lord tells us, which is what Gideon did. He was so confident. As Pete said, he told these people, I'll come back. You'll be punished for this." And then in verse 7, "And Gideon said, Therefore, when the Lord hath delivered Zeba and Zalmunna," I just read that, didn't I? I'll read it again. "Delivered Zeba and Zalmunna into my hand, then I will tear your flesh with the thorns of the wilderness and with briars. And he went up thence to Penuel and spake unto them likewise. And the men of Penuel answered him, as the men of Succoth had answered him. And he spoke also unto the men of Penuel, saying, When I come again in peace, I will break down this tower."
Now here again, he's trying to get food for his army, right? So the men of Penuel say, "No, you haven't captured these kings. We don't have the assurance that this is the safe thing to do," is the essence of it. He said, "All right, I'll deal with you. When I get back, I will tear your tower down. I'm going to come back in peace." You know what that means? I will have won the war. And when I do, then I'm going to come back and deal with you.
"Now Zeba and Zalmunna were in Karkor, and their host with them about..."
Host being the army.
"About 15,000 men. All that were left of all the host of the children of the east."
Think about this. I'm going to interrupt her here, okay? How many does Gideon have with him?
100.
He's pursuing 15,000 with 300. Okay? "I'm going to defeat them."
Confident.
Now you see why the people of Succoth and Penuel were not as convinced, okay, as Gideon was.
"For there fell 120,000 men that drew the sword."
That's with all the armies together, that we know about Ephraim and Zebulun and others. Okay.
"And Gideon went up by the way of them that dwelt in tents on the east of Noba and Jogbeha, and smote the host, for the host was secure. And when Zeba and Zalmunna fled, he pursued after them and took the two kings of Midian, Zeba and Zalmunna, and discomfited all the host."
So, God's faithful to his word. Gideon did what he was supposed to do. In other words, God wasn't doing it for him, but God was assisting him as he did it. And this is the thing we have to remember. Just because God says, I'm going to give them into your hand, doesn't mean you don't have to do anything. A lot of times, we don't want to fight. We don't want to take the territory, you understand? And so there's something God does, there's something that we do. So it's a cooperative effort here to win this battle. But Gideon is not letting their number of 15,000 discourage him and his 300. He takes his men and defeats their army and captures these two kings.
And Gideon, the son of Joash, returned from battle before the sun was up, and caught a young man of the men of Succoth, and inquired of him. And he described unto him the princes of Succoth, and the elders thereof, even 70 men.
What he's asking is, I want to know who the leaders of the city are. You describe them to me, okay? Because that's who his approach would have been to get food, okay? And so the elders and these leaders turned him down. And so he gets this young man to identify them for him.
And he came unto the men of Succoth and said, Behold, Zeba and Zalmunna, with whom ye did upbraid me, saying, Are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna now in thy hand, that we should give bread unto thy men that are weary? And he took the elders of the city, and thorns of the wilderness and briars, and with them he taught the men of Succoth.
Well, that's an interesting way to teach, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've had it said to me, you know, the whipping was going to teach me, okay? And it'll get your attention, all right? But in reality, I mean, what he's doing, if you can imagine this with thorns and briars, being whipped, beaten with thorns and briars, yeah, that'll teach you a lesson. And these are the diplomats that he's doing this to, you understand? The leaders of the city. The more I read about him, the more I like him. You understand? He's, you first find that he's hiding, threshing wheat. You think, well, this guy's a coward or whatever. No, he's not a coward. He's a wise man. And when he's approached as a mighty man of valor. He's living that out. You understand? I mean, when you take a minority army and defeat a humongous army, number one, it takes some courage to go against them and to lead your men against them to where they don't turn coward and run the other way. You understand? And then when you deal with the people who have not cooperated with you, yeah, he was a mighty man of valor. He was a man of courage.
And he beat down the tower of Penuel and slew the men of the city.
I look at him, I mean, he dealt with them. He tore the tower down and killed them.
Then he said unto Zeba and Zalmunna, What manner of men were they whom ye slew at Tabor? And they answered, As thou art, so were they. Each one resembled the children of the king. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
And he said, They were my brethren, even the sons of my mother. As the Lord liveth, if ye have saved them alive, I would not slay ye. And he said unto Jether, his firstborn, Up and slay them. But the youth drew not his sword, for he feared, because he was yet a youth.
Now, if you think about this, he's not seasoned, okay? So evidently he's young, and this is all somewhat new to him. And so he tells his son, I mean, he's training him on the job training, you understand. And so he tells him, all right, I want you to go slay these two kings. And he didn't have the courage of his father.
Then Ziba and Zalmunna said, rise thou and fall upon us, for as the man is, so is his strength. And Gideon arose and slew Ziba and Zalmunna and took away the ornaments that were on their camels' necks.
You know, it almost sounds like somewhat of a mockery or something like this. They wouldn't do it, right? You do it. You know? Okay, I'll oblige you. And so that's exactly what he did. And so what's he doing? He's setting an example before his son and before the rest of the army. When God puts them in your hands, you do your job. Then you take care of them. And that's exactly what he did.
Then the men of Israel said unto Gideon, rule thou over us, both thou and thy son, and thy son's son also, for thou hast delivered us from the hand of Midian. And Gideon said unto them, I will not rule over you, neither shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you.
Now you're getting the picture. We're talking about judges, okay? And so what is Gideon actually doing as a judge in Israel? He's executing the judgment of God on the Midianites, right? And so he wipes this out. So he saves Israel from the oppression that they've been under. And they say, well, you know, we want you to rule over us. No, that's not my position. I'm not to rule over you. God's to rule over you. You understand? We've got to get this mentality. Too many people are wanting to rule over people rather than to let God rule over them. Denominations rule over you. And so many pastors want to rule over the congregation. They don't want God to rule the congregation. If they wanted God to rule the congregation, they wouldn't follow the desires of the people. They would tell the people the desires of God. But too many people who are supposed to be leading the congregation are not leading them. They're following their lead because they want to be accepted by the people. We have to learn to be accepted by God. We do the will of God, you understand? And we don't pay attention to what the people are saying. We pay attention to what God's saying. I don't want to rule over people. I can understand what Gideon's saying, though. I don't want to rule over you. I don't want the responsibility. You understand? I'm not in this to rule over you. I've done what I'm supposed to do. We're here to help you, not to lord over you. But yet he was leading, you understand? Every nation needs a leader. But they need to be subjected to God, to where the leader's just doing what God says to do. And you understand that God initiated this with Gideon? He's just minding his business thrashing wheat when God shows up and talks to him and gives him a mandate. Now, when God puts a mandate on you, then you'd better fulfill your mandate. And that mandate was you lead the people to victory. And so that's what we're trying to do. That's the role of ministry, is to lead the people into the kingdom of God and let God rule over them. Don't keep them out of the kingdom of God. Get them introduced to God. Get the kingdom of God established in their heart to where they're led by the Spirit of God, not by people or the flesh. And then they'll know when that person who's ever in leadership position, they'll know if it's God speaking or if it's just some man trying to do his thing. You understand? And I tell you, as ministers, we better stop trying to do our thing and do God's thing. Pay attention to him so he can rule over the people.
And Gideon said unto them, I would desire a request of you, that you would bring me every man the earrings of his prey. For they had golden earrings, because they were Ishmaelites. And they answered, We will willingly give them. And they spread a garment, and did cast therein every man the earrings of his prey. And the weight of the golden earrings that he requested was 1,700 shekels of gold, beside ornaments and collars and purple raiment that was on the kings of Midian, and beside the chains that were about the camels' necks.
Now, something to look at here. These Midianites were Ishmaelites, descendants of Ishmael. Who's Ishmael? Ishmael was the son of the flesh, right? Hagar, Abraham. And so you have a son of Abraham fighting against descendants of Abraham through Isaac, right? So you have the Ishmaelites fighting against the Israelites. And the Israelites defeat them, but they can't cohabit. You understand? God says you cast out the bondwoman and her servant. They're not going to cohabit with the child of promise, all right? And so not only did they defeat these Ishmaelites, but they spoiled them by taking the gold off them. Now, I don't know why Gideon wanted this. He didn't want it for himself personally. Okay, you want to keep reading that?
And Gideon made an ephod thereof, and put it in his city, even in Ophrah. And all Israel went thither a whoring after it, which thing became a snare unto Gideon and to his house.
So Gideon takes this coal, this gold, and makes an ephod like is what the priest wore. Okay, I don't know why he's doing this. He probably had good intentions of. You know, that represented God or whatever. But anyway, he set the thing up in the city, and it became a snare to him because the people started seeing that ephod as God. And because they're seeing that as God, they're turning away from God. That's why he's talking about the prostituting, you know. They go after, they're unfaithful to God. So there's an infidelity here. They're leaving the true God to go after something made by man. And you understand the ephod was made by man. And I was thinking this morning as I left the house, you know, every God other than the God, Jehovah God, that we serve, every other God's a fabrication of man. Whether it's done with his hands, with wood or metal or whatever, or whether he looks up at the constellations and imagines a God. But we have a God that lives, the only true and living God, a God who lives and interacts with his people. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Yeah.
You might as well, because he does, okay? And so we can communicate with him. Not only do we talk to him, they can talk to gods, a false god, but they don't have a God that talks to them. You understand? They may hear a demon talk or something. They don't have a God, a true and living God, that talks to them. You follow me? And if you think about it, we are a very blessed people in that God would select us to reveal himself to us so that we're not deceived with all this other false gods around us. But we have to stay in pursuit of him or we'll get deceived into following the false. And that's what's going on. It's been going on all over the world, especially in this nation. People started withdrawing from God and making this, that, and the other the thing that controlled their lives. And anything that's controlling your life, sure, God. I don't care what it is. It's in control of you. We're to be led by the Spirit.
Verse 28. Thus was Midian subdued before the children of Israel, so that they lifted up their heads no more, and the country was in quietness 40 years in the days of Gideon.
So after Gideon and his armies defeated the Midianites, Israel enjoys peace for 40 years. But in that 40-year time period, you're going to see they turn away from God. This is their pattern. All the way through history, this is their pattern.
Now, before we move on, I'd like to give you a test question. The Israelites were delivered from the oppression of the Midianites under the leadership of Gideon. That's right. Gideon's your answer. And let's look at verse number 29. And Jerubbaal, the son of Joash, went and dwelt in his own house. And Gideon had 70 sons of his body begotten, for he had many wives.
Think about that. 70 sons. Numerous wives.
A lot. And his concubine that was in Shechem, she also bare him a son, whose name he called Abimelech. And Gideon, the son of Joash, died in a good old age and was buried in the sepulchre of Joash, his father, in Ophrah of the Abiezrites. Thank you. And it came to pass, as soon as Gideon was dead, that the children of Israel turned again and went a-whoring after Balaam and made Baal-berith their god. And the children of Israel remembered not the Lord their God, who had delivered them out of the hands of all their enemies on every side. Neither showed they kindness to the house of Jerubbaal, namely Gideon, according to all the goodness which he had showed unto Israel.
Okay. There's something to remember here, because when we get into the next chapter, this is going to come to light. Gideon had 70 sons by wives, but he had a concubine, okay? And he had a son by the concubine, all right? So that's going to play out then here in the very near future.
Mm-hmm.
As we read, but he died in a good old age. Then the people forget about the leadership. They forget about the deliverance that God has wrought for them through the leadership of Gideon. And what do? They turn around and they go after God. This particular God is Baal-berith. And so that's who they served. They made that their God, and they forgot the Lord God, the true and living God. Said they didn't remember not the Lord who had delivered them out of the hands of their enemy. They didn't show mercy or kindness to Zerubbabel. Some pronounce this Jerubbaal, okay? Jerub is compound. Jerub means contend with. Contend with Baal. This is Gideon, okay? And his father said that because of him destroying the idol of Baal. They go right back following Baal. Isn't that amazing? But others, just depends on who divides the syllables, whether it's Jerubbaal or Zerubbabel. But either way, it's talking about or referring to Gideon, okay?
And Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal, went to Shechem unto his mother's brethren and communed with them and with all the family of the house of his mother's father, saying, Speak, I pray you, in the ears of all the men of Shechem, whether it's better for you, either that all the sons of Jerubbaal, which are 70 persons, reign over you, or that one reign over you. Remember also that I am your bone and your flesh.
So think about this. Gideon's already made the statement that he wasn't going to rule over the people, nor was his sons going to rule over the people. He's already put that out. But this concubine son is trying to make a power play, okay? And this happens so often. People are pursuing power. They're pursuing position. So he goes to the men of his city and says, which is better for you? For the 70 sons of Gideon to rule over you? Or how about me? I'm bone of your bone, flesh of your flesh. In other words, I'm a citizen of this place. Wouldn't it be better to have a hometown boy ruling over you than these other guys ruling over you? That's his presentation to them, anyway.
And his mother's brethren spake of him in the ears of all the men of Shechem, all these words, and their hearts inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, he is our brother. And they gave him 70 pieces of silver out of the house of Baal-berith, wherewith Abimelech hired vain and light persons which followed him.
In other words, they're talking about evil people.
Mm-hmm.
So they give him the money out of the house of their false god. They're hiring him to lead them. He's going to be their leader. He's going to be their ruler. Okay? And so he gathers him this army of evil people, wicked people. Birds of a feather flock together, right?
Yeah. And he went unto his father's house at Ophrah and slew his brethren, the sons of Jerubbaal, being 70 persons upon one stone, notwithstanding, yet Jotham, the youngest son of Jerubbaal, was left, for he hid himself.
Now, I've looked at this and done a lot of research, and I think the wording can be somewhat confusing. Because he talks about 70 sons, okay? Gideon has 70 sons, and then one by the concubine, that would be 71 sons, right? But then he talks about killing 70 sons of Gideon on one stone. But yet we're going to find that there is another son, all right? Did he kill 70 or did he kill 69? You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, there are 70 sons that are assigned to be killed, but one escapes, yeah, is how it appears to me. Anyway, you can keep reading.
Yeah. And all the men of Shechem gathered together, and all the house of
Let's go up here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And read that again.
And he went unto his father's house at Ophrah, and slew his brethren, the sons of Jerubbaal, being 70 persons upon one stone. Notwithstanding, yet Jotham, the youngest son of Jerubbaal, was left, for he hid himself.
So, is there 71 or 72? Did he kill 70? Did he kill 69? My suspicion is they killed 69, one of them got away, okay?
Yeah. And all the men of Shechem gathered together, and all the house of Milo, and went and made Abimelech king by the plain of the pillar that was in Shechem.
So they all gather together. Now, they make him the king. Well, if he's the king, God's not ruling, right?
Right. And when they told it to Jotham, he went and stood in top of Mount Gerizim, and lifted up his voice and cried, and said unto them, hearken unto me, ye men of Shechem, that God may hearken unto you.
Now, here's something that interests me. As he goes up on the Mount Gerizim, you know what? Gerizim's where they pronounce the curses.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Anyway, Jotham, who's the son that escaped, he goes up on the mountain and he shouts out at these men of Shechem, you listen to me. And he gives them a sort of a riddle or parable, whatever, okay?
The trees went forth on a time to anoint a king over them, and they said unto the olive tree, reign thou over us. But the olive tree said unto them, Should I leave my fatness wherewith by me thy honor, God and man, and go to be promoted over the trees? And the tree said to the fig tree, Come thou and reign over us. But the fig tree said unto them, Should I forsake my sweetness and my good fruit, and go to be promoted over the trees? Then said the trees unto the vine, Come thou and reign over us. And the vine said unto them, Should I leave my wine, which cheereth God and man, and go to be promoted over the trees? Then said all the trees unto the bramble, Come thou and reign over us. And the bramble said unto the trees, If in truth ye anoint me king over you, then come and put your trust in my shadow, and if not, let fire come out the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon.
All right, let's look at some things here. Number one, he's giving this this parable, so to speak, that he's talking about trees looking for a king to rule over them. And so the first thing they do is they go to the olive tree.
Mm-hmm.
You reign over us. The olive tree's, no, that's not what, I'm going to paraphrase all this. So, no, that's not what God designed me to do. God designed me to produce olives, which will produce olive oil. I don't need to be looking after these other things. I need to be focused on what God's called me to do. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Then we'll take a break and come back to this, okay?
Okay.